Well, how many of you know where I was last week? Where was I?
Saudi Arabia.
Close, but no cookie. Abu Dhabi, which is in what country? United Arab Emirates. Somebody has been paying attention to the lessons. Very good. So, not being a practiced preacher like Larry here, I will admit sometimes it's harder for me to think up what I'm going to talk about than other times. The natural thing this week, although you could almost argue the next one would be a Christmas lesson. Perhaps if I do this more regularly, normally I'll do it. But right now, that always seems just like when I did Father's Day. Everybody does it, so I don't know about you. I always kind of fight the everybody does it. So after my trip to Abu Dhabi, and it might have been even on the way back, and by the way, the reason I was in Abu Dhabi was because tickets.com offered some ticketing services to the FIFA has some they call club championship matches where supposedly the best club in the whole world will win this, and that's in Abu Dhabi this year and next. And my best friend John Bazilgevac, say that six times fast. Everybody just calls him John B. You can imagine why. But John Bazilgevac was having ticketing there, so that's why I went over. But one of the interesting things there is what's in Abu Dhabi?
Sand.
Strangely enough, they are not making a killing off sand or glass. What's the other thing that's in the region of the United Arab Emirates and in the United Arab Emirates? Oil, right? So you've got a case where there's a lot of money in a place like that. So, you know, as I was exchanging U.S. dollars into United Arab Emirates, do you know what kind of cash they have, what they call it? A dirham. So I was exchanging U.S. dollars into dirhams and back. And I saw these very expensive cars. A lot of times if you go to a foreign country, the cars are smaller than the U.S. But these, they have bigger cars than ours. They've got a lot of the same ones, too. And the first night I get there, I get my rental car. I get in at 8 o'clock Abu Dhabi time. And I'm driving down trying to figure out what the speed limit is because their signs aren't... Well, they do actually have English and whatever, but the speed signs, they have numbers, but then it's Arabic. So I wasn't, you know, what's that number for? You know, it could be keep your tire pressure at this level or something like that, right? So as I'm figuring about it, and I'm going, I'm thinking pretty good, you know, pretty fast, like 100 kilometers an hour, which is how many miles per hour for those forced in school? 60, probably more towards 60. By 60 miles an hour, man, these big cars are whizzing by me and shaking me, right? So a Mercedes or a Land Rover, just basically, and they get some models we don't get, but as a whole, at least it was coming. And so as I was dealing with the money back and forth, the rental cars, the cars that were shaking my rental car, and also looking at the most prolific thing in the skyline. Do you know what the most prolific thing in Abu Dhabi skyline is?
Buildings,
yeah, but actually something else related to buildings. Cranes. Not just buildings, but buildings, lots of buildings being built midway. So cranes everywhere. It hit me after I saw all that what a good subject for today's sermon would be, which is?
Money.
But you know, because I had to tell you what the thing, right? So I also, part of the reason I thought of money was that I wanted to make sure I had enough change so every kid here could get their own Abu Dhabi coin. So Marshall, can you help? Okay, so these are one dirham. And I think that's a one back there. It's a funky looking, kind of like I'll slice your throat one. Wait, don't run off though. Now, I don't know what these are, although it's funny because if you know Islam at all, you know that they have minuets, right? So first when I looked at the back of this one, I thought it was three minuets, but I actually think it's three oil rigs. So if you could give each of the kids a coin, if you give each of the kids, and if there's any leftovers and adults are interested, that's some UAE money, and the larger ones are one dirham, which is more than a quarter, but less than 50 cents. At the hotel, they gave me 3.45 dirham per dollar when my hotel bill came through, it came at 3.57 dirhams per dollar. So, gives you an idea. So, money. We're going to do this in two parts. First, we're going to talk about what the world says about money. Then we're going to talk about what God says about money. I think we all understand just how integral money is to us. For our more mature members, they probably remember penny candy. Although, actually, if you go to T-Bird, they do have penny Tootsie Rolls. So they still do have penny candy. For somebody like me, I remember the 10-cent comic books. What's a comic book cost now?
Depends on which edition you want.
Yeah. Well, a new one.
About $2.
But $2?
Two, maybe $5.
two, maybe $5. Yeah, for me, I remember 10 cents. But even with kids today, with games and stuff, that if you want to buy the latest gadget, go ahead and anybody else wants to go ahead with the older kids and then go ahead with the adults. I'm hoping not to go back there anytime soon. I'll have to edge that out if I do. Cut it out of the tape. That money is just so integral, right? Everything knows that. And even though the song was actually first written by Barrett Strong in 19—first sung, I should say. It wasn't written by him. But sung by Barrett Strong in 1959, it was actually the first Motown hit written by Motown's founder. Perhaps the song that most speaks to it is the one that the Beatles made famous and is the title of the sermon, which is Money, That's What I Want, right? Anybody remember how it goes? Anybody willing to speak up in front of a crowd and sing the first ditty, maybe? No, not money, money, money. No, that would be another good one. No, the Beatles one. Money, That's What I Want. Was the I think it was the last track off their second UK album, with the Beatles. How's it go? Come on, you guys must have. Perfect. That's the one, right? It goes, the best things in life are free, but you can keep them for the birds and bee. Now give me money. That's what I want. 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 Yeah, got that part. And that's what I want. And then it goes on a little further down. Your loving gives me a thrill, but your loving don't pay my bills. Right? And then towards the end, money don't get everything. It's true. What it don't get, I can't use. So, I mean, it's pretty sad commentary on life, right? But you got to admit that's a popular song. And just to prove it, if you go to Wikipedia, which, by the way, kids, Wikipedia is not a source for papers for school, okay? In this case, I'm feeling okay because I'm not actually giving you any scriptural references. So if it's a little inaccurate, well, trust it. But the song has been covered by a plethora, nice choice of words, of artists, including Buddy Guy, The Beatles, John Lennon during his solo career, The Trashmen, Dave Matthews Band, The Kingsmen, and it was a U.S. pop number 16, The Rolling Stones, The Who, Led Zeppelin, The Doors, Ike and Tina Turner, Ben Elliott and The Fenmen, Pearl Jam, Jerry Lee Lewis, The Flying Lizards, Shonen Knife, The Pretenders, Scissor Sisters. Anybody ever heard of them before? There you go. Secret Machines, The Sonics, The Smashing Pumpkins, Hanson, everybody's favorite. The B-52s, Cheap Trick, Josie and the Pussycats, Great White, RC Succession, The Blues Brothers. That would have been a cool one. The Avengers, plus Motown's label mates, The Supremes, Junior Walker and the All-Stars, The Miracles, Etta James, Jimmy Barnes, Waylon Jennings, and Larry's favorite, Boys to Men. Maybe not. Not after that look. And that list can't be inclusive because has anybody ever heard of the Babies? The group The Babies? They were short-lived, but man, they put out some of the best pop songs. But they did a version. I've got their greatest hits and has a version. So, you know, it obviously does speak to a lot of everybody's feeling about money, because why would it be such a covered song? I don't know if it's the most covered song. Actually, Amazing Grace is perhaps the most covered song. That's a nice commentary, actually. But for so many people to have covered it must really speak to what we think about money. And it's also led to some pretty good quotes. For instance, and these are from the Merriam-Webster Dictionary quotations, I'm tired of love, I'm still more tired of rhyme, but money gives me pleasure all the time. It's Hilaire Belloc from Fatigued. Or, those who have some means think that the most important thing in the world is love. The poor know it is money. Gerald Brennan, Thoughts in a Dry Season. Here's one, this is attributed to Senator Dirksen, but there's no proof of it, but considering what's happening these days in Congress, it's fitting. A billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon we're talking big money. I think it actually has to be updated now. A trillion here, a trillion there. Now we're talking some big money. This one's from John Kenneth Galbraith. Money is a singular thing. It ranks with love as man's greatest source of joy and with death as its greatest source of anxiety. Washington Irving from the Creole Village. The almighty dollar, the great object of universal devotion throughout our land. Can we really argue too much with that? I like this one. Again, this one may not be originally his, but it's attributed to Spike Milligan. Money couldn't buy friends, but you got a better class of enemy. I like that one. Yeah. And from a different quotation book, this one actually was probably my favorite when I was looking through it. It says, always live within your income. even if you have to borrow money to do it. And just after I decided I was going to do a sermon on money, I don't know if you guys use Twitter, I've borrowed that before, but a tweet came through from John Piper, who's a minister, I think he might be out of Minneapolis, but this came through, just happened timing-wise. The love of money will destroy an old man or a little boy. The devil deals in avarice and lures with gold to the abyss. So that's actually a good segue. Now we've talked about what the world thinks of money. They want it, right? And I think we want it. I'm willing to go ahead and see if I can fight the temptations of being rich. So far, God has decided that is not a temptation I can handle. But let's talk about the Bible. And considering that money and riches have been a fascination of man, it's no surprise that it's not hard to find a lot in the Bible about money. Sometimes it's a great subject for stories. It can teach. So let's look at one of those. Let's go to Matthew chapter 22, and we're going to look at verses 15 through 22. Matthew chapter 22. And we're going to look at verses 15 through 22. We're going to start off with some plotting Pharisees. The Pharisees seemed to plot a lot when it came to Jesus, huh? So, everybody there? Chapter 22, starting with 15. Then the Pharisees went and plotted how to entangle him, Jesus, in his words. And they sent their disciples to him. Notice they had disciples too. Along with the Herodians, saying, "Teacher, we know that you are true and teach the way of God truthfully, and you do not care about anyone's opinion, for you are not swayed by appearances." Nice lead up, huh? "Tell us then what you think. Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" But Jesus, aware of their malice, said, "Why put me to a test, you hypocrites? Show me the coin for the tax." So, see if I can... Here, George, can you come here for a second? I'm not sure that would be it, but look at that coin. Ready? So he says, "Show me the coin for the tax." And they brought to him a denarius. And Jesus said to them, "Whose likeness and inscription is this?" So whose likeness is that on the coin? Do you know?
Caesar.
Very good. Very good. They said, "Caesar's." Then he said to them, "Therefore render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's." When they heard it, they marveled, and they left him and went away. So you can kind of see it. I'll go ahead and pass this one around afterwards. But I don't know if that would be the coin, but on the coins it did have a picture of Caesar. So what was the point of this story? Money, obviously a very integral part. What's the point of this story? Just main point? That's right. When it doesn't conflict, when it doesn't conflict with our duty to God, you should listen to authority, right? Now, obviously, comes some point. I'm afraid our taxes are about to go up so much, I'm not sure I can do both. But the reality is that it was a great way to teach us that we do give to the authorities God has established the respect and the honor that they deserve, and we give to God the ultimate honor, right? Let's look at another one. Let's look at Mark chapter 12, verses 41 through 44. Mark chapter 12, verses 41 through 44. And I prefer the translations that say might. I'm afraid mine doesn't, but I prefer the translations that say might. That's one of those words that just seems neat to me. Are we there? Right, 41. And he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. It's funny, one of the things that I read about this said this was a parable. It's not a parable. He sat down. This is history, right? So, and he sat down opposite the treasury and watched the people putting money into the offering box. Many rich people put in large sums. And a poor widow came, probably, I imagine a small poor widow, probably about your size, Marshall. Even that didn't get his attention. It must be. Now, this is pretty sad when the board up there is more interesting than me to Marshall. Many rich people put in large sums, and a poor widow came in and put in two small copper coins, which make a penny. And he called the disciples to him and said to them, notice it was important enough to pull them over, right? Not a minor story here. He's sitting alone, and he calls them over. And he said to them, "Truly I say to you, this poor widow has put in more than all those who are contributing to the offering box. For they all contributed out of their abundance, but she, out of her poverty, has put in everything she had to live on. Right? So a widow's mite would be something that looks like, I think it's that right there would be a widow's mite. See the widow's mite? Is that really big? If your mom said, hey, Marshall, you're going to get an allowance, and your allowance every week is going to be a widow's mite, we'd all jump for joy, huh? Although, Mikey, now that I think of it. So we could go ahead and pass that one around, too. What's the point of that story? Another good money story, right? What's the point?
One gave all she had, the other gave out of abundance.
So it really isn't the amount that matters, right? It's what's behind it. I mean, look, you go right back to the garden when it all started. Who knows? It might have been that it was a better tossed salad that Cain gave, but his heart wasn't right. Right? So, there's one more. This one, I debated a little bit doing it, but I got to admit that I always like it when a fish pays taxes. So let's go to Matthew 17, verses 24 through 26. Matthew 17, verses 24 through 26. Matthew 17, that's right. If the IRS comes knocking, send them, give them a fishing pole, send them down to the creek. So 17, 24 through 26. When they came to Capernaum, the collectors of the two drachma tax went up to Peter and said, "Does your teacher not pay the tax?" He, Peter, said, "Yes." And when he came into the house, Jesus spoke to him first, saying, now this is pretty interesting. Who spoke first? No. Well, technically, Jesus spoke first, right? So people keep having a problem with Jesus being omniscient, divine, or whatever. Jesus spoke first. Peter didn't get any words out of his mouth. So unless somebody saw what Peter was doing and ran back to the house first, guess what? So Jesus spoke to him first, saying, "What do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth take toll or tax? From their sons or from others?" And when he said, "From others," Jesus said to him, "Then the sons are free. However, not to give offense to them, go to the sea and cast a hook and take the first fish that comes up. And when you open its mouth, you will find a what?
Four drachma.
Four drachma, or mine says a shekel, right? Take that and give it to them for me and for yourself." So quite a bit you can learn from this. So what was the tax, by the way? How much was the tax? Which is... half a shekel, right? Very good, because I was waiting for somebody to say a shekel, but it's not. It was two people, so one shekel. So a shekel, I think, actually the shekel is already moving around. This is a half a, I take it back. No, this is the shekel right here. And whose image is on there, Marshall? Who's it?
Caesar.
So it looks like Caesar, huh? So you can pass that around. So what's the point of that story, the story that we just read? I think there are multiple points. The one that I like most out of it is that Jesus really did love Peter, and he allowed Peter to save face, because he could have forced Peter to go back and just say, hey, look, you're whatever. But he, to not give offense, he went ahead and made it so he could pay for it. But also walked the line in such a way that he wasn't admitting, because it came from a fish, that he wasn't saying that he should pay the tax. So those stories, I mean, throughout the Bible, you can find things like that where you don't necessarily think otherwise how integral money is even to the biblical stories. But it didn't start with us. There are societies that have bartered, but money has been key across the board, right? But the Bible does not limit itself to just speaking of money as part of a story, as an object in a lesson. It speaks directly to it. So let's go ahead and look at, the first case I want you to look at where it says something specifically about money. We're going to go to Hebrews chapter 5. Hebrews 5. And as I've mentioned to you before, Hebrews is a nice long book, so it's a good anchor book towards the end of the New Testament. Hebrews chapter 5. And we're going to start with verse 5 and read verse 6 too. So Hebrews chapter 5, verses 5 and 6. Oh, wait, I must have done it wrong here. No, I must be off one. It's definitely in Hebrews. I should have checked it. So tell you what, don't look there, because maybe somebody will find it as I do it. But either way, the verses in Hebrews that I meant to do, and I'll have to look at it before I get home, keep your life free from love of money and be content with what you have, for he has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you. So we can confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear, what can man do to me? So in Hebrews, I apologize, I'll have to check better next time, but in Hebrews, what does it say to do? It says, keep your life free from love of money and be content with what you have. Did somebody else find where I really meant it? What? Say it out loud, I can't hear you. 13, was that what it was? It was 13? Yes, very good. So chapter 13, verses 5 and 6. Does everybody else say keep free from love? What do the other ones say? Keep your life free from love of money is what mine says, starting verse 5.
Let your character be free.
From money? Love of money? Or?
From the love of money.
All right. So there's a start. That's kind of a first introduction on what it says about money, right? Luke, won't make you turn to it, but Luke says in chapter... Well, assuming I haven't typoed this one too. Luke says in chapter 16, verses 13 through 14... Well, actually, let's turn to this one, because this is pretty important. So Luke chapter 16. And this time of year, everybody probably sees Luke sooner or later, because it's when we start talking about the birth of Jesus, it's one of the most popular ones to go to. Luke chapter 16, verses 13 and 14. No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to the one and despise the other. And what's the next line? Anybody? You cannot serve God and money. And most people could stop there, but I think the next line jumped out at me when I was reading it. The Pharisees, who were lovers of money, heard all these things, and they ridiculed him. You cannot serve God and money. Pretty straightforward. Any confusion? Need somebody to interpret that for you? Can figure that out pretty good, huh? Ecclesiastes. Now, Ecclesiastes, you got to be careful, because sometimes it says something you don't want to encourage people. So you got to kind of read what God's saying. Ecclesiastes makes a good point. He says in Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10, Solomon says, he who loves money will not be satisfied with money, nor he who loves wealth with his income. This also is vanity. How many rich, happy people do you know when you actually get under the covers? I'm not talking about what they put, you know, with their publicists. A lot of misery going on. How do you think Tiger Woods is feeling right now? His wife? Kids? Plenty of money, right? And it's interesting. Has anybody ever, my age, remember the song Power Windows? You know, it's a song, I'm forgetting the guy's name, but it's just one that I actually have, got the video too. But it's talking about a guy who's got a car that's only got an AM radio, he's got to roll down his windows and stuff like that, but he's happy because he's got his girl, right? And this is other guy who's got the rich car with the power windows and all that, and he's miserable because his family doesn't love him. You know? Money doesn't make you happy. Zephaniah, chapter 1, verse 18. This one's going to be a pain. I'm going to have our time finding it. Let's all look to it, because this one's actually kind of a scary one. Zephaniah, chapter 1, verse 18. Okay, who knows the Bible better than me, so I don't have to look at the table of contents. Zephaniah, it's one of them minor, not as in importance.
After Haggai.
Oh, it's just before Haggai, actually. Yep. So Zephaniah... 1729. If you have my Bible, it's page 1729. Maybe that's what we'll do for the next one. We'll all just randomly choose a page number and see what we learn. Zephaniah, chapter 1, verse 18. Are most people there yet? Or I'll give you a moment, because this one's actually very important. It's nice and short. It's very important. Especially since the verse before ends with the word dung. I never. Well, actually, we'll go tell you what, while you're still looking for verse 18, I'll start at 17. I will bring distress on mankind so that they shall walk like the blind because they have sinned against the Lord. Their blood shall be poured out like dust and their flesh like dung. Neither, this is verse 18, neither their silver nor their gold shall be able to deliver them on the day of the wrath of the Lord. It's pretty sad, right? Does money deliver you from the wrath of the Lord? Can you get enough? We'll go ahead, because I'll go ahead and go over if I don't. We'll go ahead and skip having you look the next few up. But 1 Timothy chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. The saying is trustworthy. If anyone aspires to the office of overseer, he desires a noble task. Therefore, an overseer must be above reproach, the husband of one wife. Sober-minded, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not a drunkard, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, not a lover of money. How about 2 Timothy 3, verses 1 through 9? But understand this, that in the last days there will come times of difficulty, for people will be lovers of self, lovers of money, proud, arrogant, abusive, disobedient to their parents, ungrateful, unholy, heartless, unappeasable, slanderous, without self-control, brutal, not loving good, treacherous, reckless, swollen with conceit, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having the appearance of godliness but denying his power. Avoid such people. And I could go on, and I probably should have started out when I got to interject. I should say, lovers of money, because this is a nasty list. It's not a good list. It's a nasty list. So it's not looking so good for money, is it? Especially that last list, and I stopped for time's sake. It's in a list with a whole bunch of other characteristics I don't think any one of us want to raise our hand to, but sadly many of us have to. So far we've seen we should keep our life free from the love of money. We've seen that you cannot serve God and money. We've seen that money will not satisfy. So even if you want to try, it's not going to satisfy you. We've seen that money will not deliver us from God's wrath. We've seen that we shouldn't be lovers of money, right? Any other biblical quotes about money that come to mind to you guys? Any ones that jump out that you think of? Let's look at that one. That's the one that's probably most famous. So we're going to turn to there for the last reference. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Let's go to 1 Timothy chapter 6. And there's some scriptures, I mean, probably the most famous scripture in all the Bible is John 3:16, right? And I think it has good reason for being that. But this is another one that, whether you've memorized it or not, you almost definitely have heard it. So 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. Now there is great gain in godliness with contentment. And by the way, I like reading a little bit more because it's the contrast that often makes the point more. We could just go ahead and read the verse with it. But the contrast starts off talking about godliness. Now there is great gain in godliness with contentment. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. Can you take silver or gold out of the world? No. But if we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. I'd hate to think how many televangelists started out truly with the love of God. And then you get money, right? The love of money is a root, not the root. I don't think you can say the root. There's plenty of other things. I suspect pride is one of the biggest roots. Mm-hmm. But the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. So, as noted before, not looking so good for money, right? Now, when I was putting the sermon notes together, I realized I wasn't actually doing a whole bunch of commentary. You know, you say something, you do a lot. Because they really do speak for themselves, right? Do I really need to explain any of those verses? Were they not clear enough? Punchline is, love of money, not so good, right? What's the biblical alternative? So now, great, how many people have said, Republicans, you keep talking about why we shouldn't do health care. What's your alternative, right? So what's the biblical alternative? You know, Bible, you've told us money sucks. What's the alternative, right?
It's the love of money, it's not money.
It's true, it's not money. Love of, right, and you do need money. And I'm assuming that... Because if the church doesn't want this, I'm glad to take this home so they won't feel bad. Right? So it's not just money. If you look at Luke chapter 12, verses 32 through 34, go ahead and turn there if you want. I'm going to go ahead and read it to save time. Jesus, and you know, I'm not one of those what they call red letter Christians where somehow if Jesus says it's more important than anything else, because same Holy Spirit inspired both, right? But the fact is, it's nice hearing Jesus' own words, especially when he uses kind words, and he's talking to us. Fear not, little flock. This is Luke 12, verses 32 through 34. Fear not, little flock, for it is your Father's good pleasure to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the needy. Provide yourselves with money bags that do not grow old, with a treasure in the heavens that does not fail, where no thief approaches and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. At the end of this week, less than a week, we celebrate the fact that 2,000 years ago, God delivered a treasure greater than anything, any drachma that you could get up, better than dirhams, better than dollars. And that treasure tells all of us not to fear that our Father, if you go look back at it, that our Father wants, it's not being forced to, Jesus is not pleading with God to do this, the Father to do this. He wants to give us the kingdom. And if we will serve God instead of money, we will have that treasure in the heavens. Not only that, but if you turn to Acts 3:6, and this is a case where Peter, a man who sat by the beautiful gate at the temple, used to beg people for money. And Peter said to him in Acts 3:6, I have no silver and gold, but what I do have, I give to you. In the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, rise up and walk. Now, you can talk about the healing, but Peter was giving much more than healing. He was giving Jesus Christ. So not only has God sent a treasure so that we can have the Father's will and be with Him, but He's given us the ability. We don't give silver and gold to other people. Instead, to our friends, our neighbors, our co-workers, we have the ability to offer a treasure greater than all of that. And so as we are saying Merry Christmas to them and reminding them of the reason for the season, let's not forget that we have that treasure to share. Amen. And Merry Christmas to you all.